Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, marking nearly 50 years of commitment to operating the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System. More at alyeskapipeline.com.
Hello, and welcome to Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff. Most people have heard the term gender dysphoria, but not everyone knows exactly what it means, clinically, emotionally, or for the families navigating it in real time. And yet the conversation has never been louder, and at the same time, more in need of clarity. Today, we're going to change that. Gender identity touches families in every state, every community, every faith, and every political household. And when someone we love begins a gender journey, or when we are the one on that journey, the questions that arise are often ones we don't know how to ask and aren't sure who to ask them to. What does gender dysphoria actually mean? What does gender-affirming care actually involve medically, socially, psychologically? What does a family do with the love, the confusion, the grief, and the hope that can all exist at the same time? Those are the questions we're here to answer today, with compassion, with science, and with two guests whose combined perspective is unmatched. We are privileged to welcome Mr. Aidan Key, author, educator, and a well-respected voice in gender diversity. He is a contributing author to the American Psychological Association's most recent volume on affirmative care with trans and non-binary patients. Mr. Key is the founder of GenderDiversityAndTransFamilies.org and has spent 25 years working with schools, healthcare systems, and families nationwide. He grew up in Juneau, Alaska, with his identical twin sister, who is also with us today. We have Ms. Brenda Bowers, a lifelong Alaskan, a transgender ally, and a family advocate dedicated to supporting families with a transgender loved one in their lives. She joins us here in the studio today. Mr. Key and Ms. Bowers, welcome to you both.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
Thank you. Yes.
Well, I have really been looking forward to this conversation. I met Ms. Bowers first, who introduced me to her twin, and I was really interested in bringing this topic to our community. But besides talking to Ms. Bowers in my office, I've never had a conversation about gender identity in such a open and curious way as we are about to have today. So I come to you as a willing student, and I would ask if you please correct me and correct my language as it may need to be. And also, as I ask all of my guests, then just fill me with knowledge and our community too. So I think it's an important conversation, and we want to do it justice. So let's get to know you both a little bit further, and let's start with you, Mr. Key. Please tell us more about yourself.
Well, I'm 62 years old. I live in Olympia, Washington. I did have my growing up years in Juneau, Alaska also. And a lot of life occurred along the way that led me to begin examining my gender identity. And the terms that are available today to folks were not very readily visible. Also, representations of those people were not readily visible. And if there was some type of representation, it was usually a rather harsh misrepresentation of someone who was dangerous or mentally ill or, you know, immoral, any number of things. And so connecting with that and understanding that was difficult until I became aware that somebody actually could move through a gender transition. And just like is often the case when you have visibility for a population that wasn't previously there, that can be really impactful. So I saw a trans man on a talk show quite some time ago. And he was there talking about his relationship with his wife and his child and his career. And all I could see is somebody embodying something that I thought was impossible. So so that's a little bit about me. I began my gender transition in the late 90s, and it's been quite a journey ever since.
When you were watching that program, had you already had thoughts about what a gender transition could mean, what that is, if we didn't even have the language to describe it?
Not at all. And while it feels interesting to express this now, the visible people I was barely aware of would have been somebody like Renee Richards, who was a tennis player, a professional tennis player, a transgender woman, and quite a controversy about whether she could or should compete in the women's circuit. And so I remember that from story from the 70s. But interestingly, just never made the connection that somebody might transition from female to male. And that's the part that I feel kind of silly saying, because, well, why not? But again, if I don't see it, if it's not named and there's no visual representation out there, then it essentially can feel like it doesn't exist. And that was my case. So seeing somebody on a television program was truly an aha moment. And by that time, also the little bit that I did understand made me think of those people, and I would put the word those in quotes, those mischaracterizations and harsh representations of who transgender people might be were never framed in a positive light. So it was a real conflict, and I took that epiphany, incorporated it, and essentially set it aside until I was more ready to be ready.
Wow. What was that experience like for you?
What particularly?
The experience of when you were ready, and then you've decided, this is something that I want to do. What was that? Was there an aha moment there? And then how did you approach that?
No aha moment. It was just recognizing that word transgender was circling closer and closer to me, and that I needed to examine it. And so what does it look like to think about a gender transition? I couldn't tell you. I couldn't see into the future. I didn't know what kind of life I might have. I didn't know if family, friends, community would come along with me. I didn't know if I'd be able to keep employment. If you can't keep employment, it's really difficult to keep housing. And so many other things that can cascade pretty readily. And it was scary. It was scary to think about. And essentially what helped me start was knowing that I could start in incremental ways. I don't have to commit. Which was also one of those epiphanous moments that with hindsight seems kind of silly, but the narrative out there in society and from the health professions were, you need to be really certain and solid that this is who you are and what you want to do. And I thought, well, how do I find that certainty? I don't have a crystal ball. So essentially I had to come to my own awareness of, I can step in and learn. I can step in and explore. I can even step in these small medical ways and see what that is like, and specifically hormonal care. So just knowing that I could dip my toe in the pool really made a lot of difference and helped get me information I wouldn't get in any other way. Again, the crystal ball is unavailable.
Right. I guess you knew you wanted it to be different, and you're willing to take some risk to find out what that different would be. It could be scary, because I think we are kind of told it's all or nothing. Like you, it's no turning back. You jump in there and that's it. So it's really interesting to hear. Yeah, you wanted research, of course. Mm-hmm. Like we would do with any major transition in our lives.
Right. And I'd also had a relationship with gender that was interesting. So being raised as a girl, living life as a young woman and making my way, there's a lot of amazing things about that. And being able to, be raised right alongside my identical twin sister and our friends, our other girls, almost exclusively. So what does that mean? Having a momentary thought here and there as a young person and feeling like, why wasn't I born a boy? I should have been born a boy. is just immediately followed by the, well, that's impossible, so too bad. So what is this, some cruel cosmic joke? Or, you know, being a person of faith, you know, this, why would God do this? Were just questions that never got asked and therefore never answered. So then stepping into this understanding that there is a pathway, well, what does that mean? How do I reorder my own world? How do I talk to others about it? And lots of questions that it brings up. Again, being identical twins, well, gender is often debated as, is it nature or is it nurture? And, you know, I spent 10 years going, I have no idea. I'm trying to learn. I'm trying to find out. And then I gave up.
Right.
You know, what do we know about gender? Well, we know we need a lot. There's a lot still to learn. But in that learning process that is continual to this day, it is interesting to see what the scientific world says and how the medical and mental health professions are shifting their mindsets and their approach to people with gender identity differences like myself.
Definitely. I think probably many people want to study you and your sister for sure, especially I did come across a lot of research in the early 2000s about gender and when your genitalia develops early in utero, whereas your brain, we know, develops in the later half of a pregnancy. So very interesting to think about twins in that manner, especially identical twins who share the same DNA. Then what does that mean for when you develop? But then also you're in utero. I'm assuming that you guys were in your separate amniotic sacs. Because most people are.
I don't have that memo.
You know?
I'm kind of a
with your own umbilical
well.
Cords. Right. So, right. You know, if you're in your own sac, but you're identical, your prenatal environment is somewhat different too.
Could be different.
Right?
Correct.
Very interesting.
And that's one of the things that did resonate with me in the bit of exploring and learning that I did. So much is we're genetically the same. We were raised in the same environment. And so thinking about the role that the brain plays in gender identity formation, and like you said, when is that development occurring in utero and all of that? Well, all of a sudden, then things start to make sense in a way that doesn't feel conflicting.
Right. Well, let's turn to your sister and hear from you and where you are, and tell us about yourself and how you experienced this back in the 90s.
Yeah. Well, again, my name's Brenda, and I, too, am 62 years old. yeah, this was some time ago, and it was, I didn't have even that little bit of knowledge or context that Aiden talks about back then. I had zero. I think possibly being raised in Juneau, a small community back in the 70s, we were actually raised with very little access to TV, radio, anything like that. So I had no frame of reference. Aiden back then, not Aiden, but my sister came to me and came to me specifically to tell me this. At the time, Aiden was living in Washington State, a much larger community, and he flew to Juneau to talk to me about this. And I've never had a more pivotal moment in my life. It just actually didn't compute. It was immediately terrifying. It was very scary. It was confusing. And I felt like I was grasping for some lifeline to say, oh, this is what this is. And you know, one of the main memories I have about it is that I did latch onto something and I said, oh, does this mean that you are a man born in the wrong body or born in a woman's body? And Aiden said, not necessarily. So there went the one lifeline I felt like I could hold on to. I had never heard any terminology. I had never heard the word transgender. I actually, at that moment, couldn't compute what transition meant. And So it was a tough one. I didn't have support, and it wasn't that people weren't supportive of what was happening in my life, but people didn't know what to say or how to support, except taking it one day at a time, which was the, you know, the approach that I said, well, I've got nothing here, so I might as well just take each day. And the one person who was there for me was Aiden. And even in that moment, I was very acutely aware, that moment of when I'm getting this information, I am acutely aware that Aiden is offering to support me and take me through this journey, hold my hand through a journey that neither of us knew what it was going to be like. And I thought, I'm there. I'm going on this journey because this is nothing. What I'm going through is nothing compared to the journey that Aiden's about to launch on. And so I said, okay, we're in this together.
Did you have any idea or any, was there anything from childhood or anything where you could say, oh yeah, I could see this happening?
Yeah, sure. Well, not necessarily that I could see this happening, but I certainly saw that we were different. And people, of course, couldn't tell us apart. When we were young, we were dressed identically. And I thought it was super fun. And I loved the clothes that we wore. My sister did not. And so as time went on, I started to see that we sort of branched out with different friendships as we got older, different activities, but not too many different activities. We both played sports, and, you know, just kind of chalking it up to, well, of course you're going to have different friends. So I remember that people used to say, well, I know how we can tell these two apart. My sister's a tomboy, and I'm the lady. And I never questioned that. Mm-hmm. At this point in my life now, I look back, like Aiden's talking about, looking back with hindsight. Well, lady is a pretty extreme term for somebody like me. I loved doing what were considered boy things, you know, just playing outdoors, climbing trees, having adventures, sports, etc. Sports weren't terribly available when we were young. So being involved in athletics, you know, outside of something like cheerleading or gymnastics, you know, that was a new frontier. So we both play basketball.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm thinking back to the 70s, and when was there was a Title IX that advocated for women and men to be playing in sports and have equal access to this. So you're coming at it at a time where probably that word tomboy was more in use, when there are girls wanting to play traditionally male things, right?
Correct.
So yes, very interesting. But with tomboy, because that's sometimes what I've heard and probably have said before, is, well, why does someone need to transition to another body or mindset? What happened to this tomboy term, which we never really use today?
I think I still hear it in use a lot, but there's an examination of it. And tomboy is used to describe someone who has interests or behaviors or plugging into activities not considered traditionally female.
Mm-hmm.
All the things that Brenda mentioned. Well, you know, if that's the case, then just about every girl in Alaska is a tomboy. Because, you know, when we were growing up, we were outside.
Yep.
So what we're witnessing tends to fall into the category of gender expression. It's how we're expressing ourselves in the world and what people see. But there's an additional piece, you know, this gender identity piece, that isn't the case for every tomboy. By any stretch. And so how does that gender identity piece come into play? And that is, you know, very simply, you know, sometimes even young children will say, gosh, you know, I'm a boy on the inside, even though you see girl on the outside. Well, you know, if that kid's little, you know, is the kid saying, well, I like to play basketball, therefore I'm a boy? And if so, you know, then the response would be, hey, a lot of people like to play sports. Girls play basketball too. And then that kid can say, oh, well, then I'm a girl that likes to play basketball. But if that kid says, well, actually, I hear you on that, but still, I'm a boy on the inside, that's something to take note of. It doesn't necessarily mean an indicator of being transgender and that that person might pursue a path towards a gender transition. But it is, there are distinct things, this gender expression versus gender identity. Gender identity just being a person's innate sense of their own gender. Most people don't have to think about it because their innate sense of their gender aligns with how they identify and move through the world. But for somebody like me, that's a really helpful distinction because it helps me make sense of the world and the sense of my own world.
And interestingly, with gender expression, is now we're at a time where gender is expressed in so many different ways. And we're very accepting of that. You know, it's not that your activity is linked to your gender. And so you would think if it were all about the expression of gender that there would be less transgender people, not more transgender people or gender diverse people. So very interesting that you can express your gender in whatever way you want to express it, but still people are feeling innately the opposite gender.
Well, that's where all the layers come in that are part of conversations today versus back in 72 when Title IX was incorporated. Gender expression is actually pretty elusive. It's pretty arbitrary. It changes over time. It changes by community, changes by culture, changes all over the world. And gender roles can as well, which people don't often realize because in our culture in the U.S., largely speaking, you have boys and you have girls and you have women and you have men and there you go. Other cultures make room for more gender identities and those gender differences may have different roles in those specific communities and for hundreds, if not thousands of years. So we could do well to study the planet and the experiences we have to better understand where we are today. But I will say one thing that that I, just in my own journey, in my own learning, I have had to unpack some things that have helped me make my understanding of my own journey.
Excellent. I think that's a good place for us to take a break. And when we come back, let's get into actually maybe starting with some definitions and defining some terms for us. Okay. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. After this short break, we will continue our discussion of gender identity with our guests, Mr. Aiden Key and Ms. Brenda Bowers, as Line One continues statewide. Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff. I'm joined by Mr. Aiden Key, founder of Gender Diversity and TransFamilies.org, and his identical twin sister, Ms. Brenda Bowers, lifelong Alaskan transgender ally and family advocate. In this section, we are going to talk more about gender identity. Okay, Aiden, please tell us some definitions, some words that we need to know to better understand this topic. And I guess we could start with gender identity.
Sure. Well, gender identity, a person's innate sense of their own gender. Mm-hmm. I kind of just want to throw a solid period right there.
There we go.
So if you take a look and examine your sense of self, your relationship to gender, say, well, hey, what are you? What am I? Then the answer that comes back is the answer. Some people may say, especially children, will say, you know, well, I'm a bit of both. Or I'm neither, or I'm part girl and sometimes boy. Those are different ways that children are beginning to understand gender and beginning to understand their relationship to it, and also the way the world is putting expectations in front of them that they like or they don't like. So even little kids can have these conversations, which is pretty interesting. And why I think one of the most important distinctions is understanding that there's this gender expression, which is just play, toys, colors, activities that, again, are very arbitrarily assigned gender versus one's sense of self. So gender identity is a very helpful concept that I feel like the society is becoming more and more aware of as we move forward, and our health professions are understanding better and better to be able to serve the needs of people who are gender diverse. So on that note, I would say gender diverse is a term, I don't know, other people may define it in certain ways, but I view it as kind of a very significant umbrella encapsulating a lot of things. I think anyone can have a gender diverse way of moving through the world. But it's often used to describe people who feel themselves to be a different gender, who feel themselves to be exploring that relationship to gender. It may or may not be a transgender person. Some of the terms out there now are terms like non-binary. I know I said there's no way that term is going to stick. You know, nobody's going to grab a term like non-binary that says essentially what they're not instead of what they are. But I'm wrong. And I've been wrong on occasion here and there in life.
Sometimes.
So,
okay.
It's interesting to watch the language evolve. Some terms come and go. But in general, the term trans boy or trans man describes someone like myself who was designated female at birth, but has a relationship to maleness and identifying as male. Trans female or trans woman, same term. So with children, trans girl, trans boy. Those are a couple of other terms. More people are hearing the term cisgender out there and think, well, what the heck is that? And usually if somebody's asking that, I say, it's probably you. And it's certainly most people that cisgender, cis is a prefix from chemistry that says on the same side or in alignment, whereas trans is a cross. So transgender can be more interpreted as cross gender versus cisgender, which is most people who are not transgender. Their gender identity and their anatomical self align in the way that is expected. So I don't know, what other terms? That's
gender nonconforming. Is that the same as non-binary?
You know, I think gender nonconforming is in the same vein as gender diverse. People used to use the term gender variant. They used to have other terms as well. It's just which one seems to be more common usage these days. So I tend to use gender diverse more. Gender nonconforming, you know, what does that mean? That could be anyone who, it could be any woman that opts to go change the tire on her car, nonconforming activity.
That's true.
It just varies. I don't like to get in the weeds too much with terminology because then we're trying to remember, we're trying to make distinctions. How I define something or frame it might be different than how somebody on the East Coast describes things.
That's a great point.
So, I try to keep it simple, and I also try to grab a hold of words that I hope people have some awareness of. So gender identity is an important term, understanding how that can be distinct from gender expression is important. Understanding how both of those things can be distinct from one's anatomical sex.
Yes.
And how none
hey,
of those
Aiden,
things.
Hey, Aiden, I'm sorry. Before you. I'm jumping
She's
in.
She's going to weigh in. Let's, yes,
well,
please.
Let me finish that little sentence there. How those three things might be or are distinct from one's sexuality, because that can be confusing for people also.
Oh, that's true. We should talk about that too.
Definitely circle back to that. Yes. I just wanted to say this the identity of cisgender, which is, if you're asking, you're probably that. We all have a gender identity. Most of us have never talked about it or thought we needed to discuss it at all. And so I one of the things I've learned over the years is that it's gender diversity sheds a light on what it is to be, how, what you think it is to be a certain gender. And I'm thinking about a conversation I had with a very cisgender Alaska man, and he was trying to understand it, and he just couldn't grasp the concept. And I asked him, what if you found yourself in some type of accident where you lost your anatomy that you identify yourself as being male? That happens.
Yes, it does.
What do you think you would be if that happened? Does that change who you feel you are as a man? And I watched that light bulb go off for him. He said, absolutely not. And I said, that's what gender identity is. He knows no matter what his body looks like or becomes, he knows who he is.
Oh, I'm glad you shared that. I've never thought about that. And I think that does make it very clear and understandable and relatable.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. Mr. Key, that, yeah, you have a very bright sister. Tell us more about the sexuality aspects, because that's true. And now you're thinking about your anatomy, your genitalia, and there's the differences between gender and sex, and then also the differences between gender identity and sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thinking about one's anatomical sex, you get the cards you are dealt. I look forward to the day where we understand the brain's role in gender, as well as chromosomes and in utero environments, endocrine systems, etc. What many people don't know is that there's women out there in the world who have been and are women their entire lives who have XY chromosomes, which we so immediately associate with men. So you look under them in a microscope, and you're not going to recognize who you're looking at as being one and the same. So if we're more aware of the true diversity within our bodies, then we can also incorporate the possibility that not everybody's the same, and that gender isn't as simple as that one or that one, without the possibility that there could be a wide range of variables that make it quite diverse. So people are often not aware of intersex differences, which are not theoretical. We as humans embody these differences. Some people know that they do and some people don't. So I wish along the way in life that would have been incorporated into my learning about the human body in my science classes and whatnot. So fast forward to this sexual orientation piece. Oftentimes, this notion of being transgender is associated with sexuality, and partly because the vast majority of us until more recently had to grow up and then find our way with gender identity differences. And even when you think about the acronym LGBTQ+, that T representing transgender people is essentially lumped into the same category as lesbian, gay, bisexual, you know, and the other terms that existed are describing sexual orientation differences. So it's no wonder that people inadvertently conflate these things. And if I were to change one thing on planet Earth, it would be helping illuminate that gender identity is different than sexuality, which is why we can recognize gender differences at whatever age that they show up. So that's a societal awareness and understanding effort that needs to occur, and that we are smack in the midst of, and why there's a lot of drama on the topic. Because people will say, well, why are you talking to children about such age inappropriate conversations? They're busy thinking about discussions related to sexuality and sexual acts and whatnot. So, yeah, I don't know. I answered part of your question. I don't know if I got all of it.
And then there are transgender men who were, prior to being transgender, attracted to the male sex, and those that are attracted to the female sex.
Correct.
And then after, when you have a transition, that doesn't change your sexual orientation and who you're attracted to. Is that correct?
Right. That same person in a heterosexual relationship, or at least perceived as a man and a woman together, if that woman says, actually, that's not who I am, I'm male and I'm transitioning, and she wants to remain post-transition with her partner or spouse, they both are male. And then all of a sudden that relationship looks quite different and considered a gay male relationship rather than what it was a day ago, which was a heterosexual relationship.
Right. Yeah.
So the sexuality piece adds some complexity, absolutely.
Because then what does that say about the partner who is not transgender? And then does that make the partner in a homosexual relationship? Or it's fascinating.
Well, it makes the partner in a homosexual appearing relationship.
Homosexual.
It makes people perceive that person to be in that and potentially categorize and or judge that person. But from where that person sits, they didn't do anything except be who they are and love who they love. So it's interesting. One friend of mine that I've known for a long time who spoke often about being transgender had an audience member that said, well, so look, I'm a gay man and I find you as a trans man sexually attractive, or I'm attracted to you. He says, well, what does that mean about me? And my friend said, well, it just means that you have really good taste. And I thought, that's a great answer. I like that.
You're just loving a person.
Yes. You know.
We do have to take another break, but I actually just want to get into quickly, if we can, pronouns. I think that is a big topic right now. And do pronouns matter? Why do they matter? Do they matter for a cisgender individual to use pronouns? And why or why not? And it may need to be a little quick.
Yeah. How about a short version, which just says, if you use the name that I'm requesting and the pronoun that I'm requesting, you're just showing me basic respect. I'll do the same for you. I will use the name that you would like to be referred to and the pronoun that you want and expect. And we are mutually respecting each other. Even at the beginning, you said to each of us, how shall I refer to you? First names, last names, Mr., Ms., Miss, what is that way? It's a common courtesy to do that. And to me, it says, you see me for who I am. Whether you have your own internal thoughts about that and everything, you're engaging with me as a human being and treating me with the same kindness and respect that you would want. I think it's a reasonable thing to do. Is it an easy thing to do? That's another story. So switching up pronouns can be difficult and take some practice. But if you want some lessons, you talk to the children about how to do it, because they get it down. They get it really quickly.
Oh, yes. I'm always surprised by our kids and how they are so open, and they're, you know, it's easy to teach them. Yeah. I will talk about they, them after we take this next break, okay? Because that is something that I have a lot of questions about as well. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. Welcome back to Line One. I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff. I'm joined by Mr. Aidan Key, author, educator, founder of Gender Diversity and TransFamilies.org, and contributing author to the American Psychological Association's recent volume on affirmative care with trans and non-binary patients. Joining him is his identical twin sister, Ms. Brenda Bowers, a lifelong Alaskan transgender ally and family advocate. In this final segment, we are going to continue our quest to understand gender identity, and also I hope to talk about some of the resources available. We were talking about pronouns quickly before the break, and Ms. Brenda, I want to turn to you to talk about the they, them. You may know that I'm a lover of languages. I actually buy grammar books and read them. It's maybe a little sad, but I enjoy that. And so for me, I feel, and probably for other people who are supportive of the community, may find it really difficult to use they, them, because it's been taught that that is plural for several people and not singular. I can understand why you wouldn't use the word it to describe a person. So tell us about, how did this come about, and, you know, how can we think about this and embrace this?
Well, I think that I, too, am part of the grammar police. It's my major in college was English, and every word is important to me. And that was a place where I said, I don't want to draw the line, but I feel in my heart that I want to draw the line because this is not grammatically correct. And thankfully for my college education, I had learned about the English language in the sense of where it comes from. And there's what's called Old English, and there's also Middle English from however long ago. I don't remember what that is. But in Middle English, it was common to use they, them. It was grammatically correct. So if I think about the fact that the origin of our language used this term and said it was correct, to me, what we do now is simply, I don't want to just say colloquial, but it has changed. And so if I want to say correct original English, if I go back even further, I can find comfort and the ease. It gave me permission to be okay with using it and saying it was grammatically correct. So I'm going to carry that through into present day. That really helped me a lot.
I'm a little speechless with that. I didn't think that. Now what I'm thinking back into literature, older literature, I can identify times when this has been used, and I don't know how many people actually do know that, and if that's something that has been common knowledge, or is that where it stemmed from, using the term they, them? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, let me add a couple of thoughts to that. You know, that is hundreds of years ago. But if Brenda comes to me and says, well, I met this doctor, Dr. Woodruff, who hosts a radio program and is interested in having us on their show, then there you go. Or it says Dr. Woodruff would like us to, yeah, get it right, Aiden. There's a show hosted by Dr. Woodruff. Are you interested in participating in this show, Aiden? Right. And I'll say, well, yeah, tell me more about what they do. What do they talk about? What is their focus? Because I don't know your gender yet. So we have context in present day for using it in a singular way. And, you know, whatever, doesn't matter, because guess what? Today's a different day. And we Google things that we never Googled before. We have selfies. We incorporate language as times change. And so as far as even being grammatically correct, the major dictionaries of the English language anointed they, them to be in usage in a singular way as far as 2019, I think, is around when that started changing. So the grammatically correct, you know, we can resist and grumble. And, you know, I never wore hoodies. I always wore sweatshirts. And, you know, I finally say hoodie once in a while.
Yeah, there are changes to the English language all the time. Yeah, I don't know if people actually recognize that, but...
Right. Well, sure they do.
There are.
We just don't necessarily pull that into the conversation. But here's the other aspect of this, which is, and especially younger generations who are incorporating this term gender identity, and recognizing that each person has a sense of their own gender. And the he pronoun doesn't work for them, or the she pronoun doesn't work for them, and they want to use they and them, then they're making a request. And they're doing it in a time where it's grammatically correct. And they struggle with understanding what people like me, my generation, are so resistant. Like, what's the problem here? As a matter of fact, one high schooler, when he was chatting with his school principal, principal is sharing that the staff are going to do some education on gender inclusion. And the kid's like, why are we still talking about this? As in, what is the problem? There's a generational element to this, too, where the social expansion and mindset of younger people can easily incorporate they, them, and pronouns and know that it's because a person doesn't want to be pinned down with he or she.
Excellent thought.
So I don't know. Can we keep up with the younger ones? I don't know.
Probably not. Before we go to our caller, I did want to recognize that we did have a resource here in Anchorage, in Alaska, the Identity Health Clinic, and there was a recent closure of this clinic, which was a dedicated resource for families. There was an email that came in that stated that this was this major resource not only served transgender communities, but was a pivotal point for this person's quest for hormonal treatment for their prostate cancer. So now that we've lost this resource, are you aware of any other resources in Alaska for somebody who wants to learn more or someone who is entering into their own journey?
I am not aware, I admit, but what I can say is that I think your show is going to perhaps give folks some health providers maybe permission to take up some of that to help people, because, and I'll let Aiden take this a little further because I'm definitely not the expert, but hormones are hormones, and if a person needs hormonal treatment, then I think that that step can be taken by many providers. It doesn't have to be a specialized clinic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would agree. In Washington State, where I began a lot of my work with respect to gender advocacy and education, I had two providers who were willing to learn more, but needed some questions answered. We went on a road trip to Vancouver, BC, to a gender clinic that existed quite some time ago. And that pediatric endocrinologist talked to these two physicians, one just general care physician and another one who is a naturopath, and said, this care any physician can do. This is not specialty work. And I got to listen to their conversations and the questions that were answered and the light bulbs going off in in the minds of the two newer physicians who were saying, oh, I know how to do that. Oh, yes, I understand this. I know how to do these things. Question here, question there, they get answered and they're off and running. So somebody just needed to move it into the context of what they already know and understand. And that makes a significant difference. I mean, part of it is a person may feel like this is a significant specialty and therefore just say no. They can't offer that care because they don't know enough. When in reality, if you're starting, say, a cisgender man who's advancing in age, you start offering him gender-affirming care when you give him testosterone to replace his low levels. Well, you know what? I had low levels of testosterone too. Mine needed to be upped a little bit. And so the care that I need is just making sure my testosterone levels are within the appropriate range and that the other blood work that we take a look at is all in good range also. So, you know, we're in a moment in time where we're looking at these things.
We sure are. That's a good answer. And yeah, this is not, we don't need a specialized clinic. It's nice to have a resource, but I think those are things that you provide as well. It doesn't have to be right in your community, but certainly just knowing where to look and having these role models is really important for providers and for the people themselves. We have a caller. We have Dr. Christopher from Anchorage joining us. Welcome to Line One. We're going to have you be quick with your question. We're coming up on the end of the program.
Great. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you for having me on. I have a quick question, and I appreciate this dialogue. Both of the guests described gender identity as an innate sense of your internal sense of gender, or and the other said that even if a person lost their body entirely, they still know their gender. So it seems like a very individual, I guess, definition. There's not really an anchor there. So my question lies in people that, well, as we know, as we age, our thoughts, feelings, views on any number of things changes and evolves. And so we've had some detransitioners, and you know, some of these have been younger and actually have been successful in lawsuits against medical personnel. So my concise question, I guess, is how should clinicians determine when that internal sense of identity is sufficiently stable to justify medical involvement, especially when there are irreversible treatments and risks to that clinician?
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you. That's a really good question. I think we need another show for that.
I know.
How can we address that?
There's lots to discuss. So part of the misconceptions is irreversible changes. There's quite a number of changes where one can step in, and they are reversible, even if that is hormonal care. Hormones change things, but you can stop hormones, and they can revert back to a degree. You know, facial hair growth, if I were to decide, you know, hey, this isn't working for me, I would be under some serious electrolysis and whatnot to address the facial hair challenges. But there are detransitioners, and so there's no point in saying this doesn't happen. But what we recognize today, the medical mental health professions and all the professional health organizations that have weighed in and given statements, is that there are best practices, and that affirming one's gender identity and one's gender exploration is necessary for best outcomes. Now, if we can offer that care in an incremental and gradual way, we get more information. So in my work, especially within trans families, which is where a lot of families are coming to try to understand how to best support their children, I have no idea whether their child is transgender or not. Nothing is going to show that to me except for time. And a kid making a strong statement at 8 or 9 years old, or even 18 or 19 years old, is just a strong statement. So how can we support this child's exploration, support their mental health? Because denying what they're saying and trying to force that out of them does cause them harm. And we have studies that show that pretty clearly. And that when they get support for the exploration and process of discovery, their risk factors drop way down immediately. So this is about saving lives. This is about ensuring that a young person is on the planet to help them find their path and discover who they are. And I want the grown-ups in their lives, parents, other caregivers, grandparents, and health providers to be on that journey with them, so that process of discovery can be gradual and incremental. I want those children to be able to go to schools and have space to explore there also, rather than the bullying that so often does occur nowadays, because that's not good for their health either. So when it comes down to detransitioners, we hear about that in the media quite often, but when we look at the numbers, we're talking about 1 to 2%. And I know that if you get those kind of success rates for any type of medical intervention, you are celebrating. So I think we can look at this and
I'm gonna
continue
have to
examine.
I'm going to have to cut you off. It's the end of the show. I'm so sorry, but I've really enjoyed you both. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you to our audio engineer, Crystal Hyde, and our producer, Emily Mesner. You can find more information about this program and previous ones on alaskapublic.org. This is Line One, your health connection.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants, and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.